It was a meal that we ate every week, nearly every week of my childhood, but only on Friday nights. And it went pretty much the same every week. The three of us kids would arrive home from school on Friday afternoon, and my mom would have the list of household chores divvied up into three, and the bartering would begin. I'll trade you my dusting and cleaning the glass for, actually, I'll trade you your dusting and cleaning the glass for my cleaning the toilets. Please, switch. The frenzy would begin, and slowly the household chaos of a week of living with a family of five would recede, and we would see actually a somewhat civilized home. The sun would dip behind the horizon, and somehow, miraculously, the chores would come to an end. Each of us, one by one, would sink into our usual seats around the dining table. My dad would turn on the Bach Variation CD. My mom would light the candles, and then we would eat. The main dish is called Ring Tum Diddy. Ring Tum Diddy. To this day, I have no idea what that means. What I know is that it's a family recipe that comes from my great-grandmother who lived for a time in Korea as a missionary. So there might be something there. If you know, tell me. It starts with rice, steamed white sticky rice, no salt, please. And then it's layered with a cheesy, tomatoey sauce with kidney beans and topped with kimchi. And you may not comment on it until you've tasted it, because it is way more delicious than it sounds, I promise. On the side, a cabbage salad, maybe a cucumber salad, and for dessert, fresh, warm, out of the oven, homemade, sticky cinnamon rolls with the sweet stuff on the bottom and the icing on the top. It was the one time during the week when we felt free to eat ourselves into a food coma, because the rest of the evening simply consisted of relaxing in the living room and being family, being at rest, being at peace. It sounds idyllic, doesn't it? Like a little romantic. And I suspect that in reality, not every week was perfect like this. Far from it, I imagine. But that's how memory and traditions work, right? Over time, they become something bigger than the individual moments themselves. See, I couldn't have grasped it at the time, but now looking back, I realize that this meal weekly was shaping me and forming me into a Sabbath kind of life, a life where rest matters as much as work, a life where being matters as much as doing, and a life where taking time for a meal with family and friends is always worth the effort.
Hi. Happy Sabbath. Everyone's like, it's story time with Bev. I'm going to tell you a story about unimaginable hospitality. And this happened to me almost 10 years ago as a student missionary on the island of Majuro, northeast of Australia, in the boondogs of the ocean. And I was a volunteer at a health wellness center, where they had taught me to actually eat vegan. And they taught us and all of the locals from the island to use the plants of the earth and of everything around you to nourish yourself and to just enjoy life this way, right? More abundantly, they told you. And I would walk through this alleyway every day after school, after I taught. I had a first grade classroom, and afterwards, I'd walk to this wellness center, and I would help them with an exercise program and help them with the locals and that program. And I would walk by this house every day, this little house with this family who collected sea turtles, nonetheless. And I would see them every day. I never really knew them. And one day, they stopped me and they said, "You always say hi to us. We'd like to invite you to a meal. Would you come?" And I was a little reluctant because I hadn't seen them before, and you just never know. And it was one of those times when Linda sat me down, was like, be careful what you eat. The answer is yes, but whoa, be weary. And so I swallowed hard and I said, yeah, I'll come. I'm so excited. And that whole day, I was super reluctant. I remember it was a Thursday, and they invited me over for this Friday meal. And I almost didn't go. In fact, I tried to drag all of my friends with me, and they were all busy. And when I went, they had this beautiful display of food that I thought they were inviting this entire neighborhood to eat, and it turns out it was just for me. And they had actually picked out everything from under the sea, which was ironic because now I was vegan. I wasn't just vegetarian, I was vegan. I was like, I don't know what those creatures are. I mean, eel and fish and anything that you could imagine. But one thing that I learned with this hospitality was that when you walk into somebody's home, you are walking into sacred ground because they have taken the time and the energy to pour over this meal and to set it up for me. I was their honored guest, and it started with a simple hello. And it has forever stayed with me, this unimaginable hospitality that I didn't really think I was worthy of, but here I was as an honored guest of strangers, of the unchurched, and it was one of the most special moments that I will probably forever remember.
I believe that the following ingredients, when properly made in the right ratios, have a miraculous property that can help heal: black beans, yuca, olive oil, salt, garlic, and lemon juice. Here's how I know this. For 5 years, my two sisters did not speak to each other. 5 very painful years, 5 quiet, intense years. This meal that I just told you about is a meal that we all shared together at least once a week, like Pastor Vaughn's family. Once a week, we knew we could enjoy this miraculous meal together. Well, for 5 years, my parents and I, we conspired on how we could bring them together because they would not even be in the same room together, much less speak to each other. And as is often the case, they had already forgotten the reason why they weren't speaking. As is often the case, they had forgotten what injury, great injury, had caused this great divide between them. So we conspired and finally came with a reason to get them together, and that was a great anniversary celebration, my parents' 42nd anniversary. I invited them, and they both said, 42nd? Don't you celebrate 25th, 50th? What's the 42nd about? And I said, oh, it's a big deal. Google it, 42nd anniversary. And so they came, and we sat at the table, and immediately they knew this is a pretext. We know what you're up to. And we said, let's eat the yuca and the black beans and the olive oil and the garlic and the salt and the lemon juice together. And the minute, the second, those ingredients touched their taste buds, something miraculous happened. All wrongs were forgiven. All injury was forgotten. And they both began to weep without saying a word. They both stood from their chairs. They walked around each other, to each other, and they embraced, and we all witnessed the power of a meal. A meal can heal. Can this happen with sushi? Maybe. Can this happen with tacos? Maybe. Can it happen with crepes? Maybe. Can it happen over ice cream or over Cheetos or over pizza? Probably. But when we come together and we realize that whatever's been wrong, whatever's been injured, whatever is not as important as being together, miracles can happen over meals.
My friend Tommy Poole and I, for some reason, chose the hottest summer that the Middle East had seen in over a decade to backpack around the Holy Lands. And we hopped on a bus one evening, headed from the capital of Jordan towards the little city of Petra. And that name might ring a bell because you've seen the movie Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Think buildings carved into these beautiful sandstone slot canyons. That's the little city right outside the historical site called Petra. Our bus pulled in late in the evening and we got out, and for most of the Muslim world, they were practicing Ramadan, the tradition of Ramadan. So we get off our bus. Most of the city is already closed down. They had already broke their fast for the day, and now restaurants and convenience stores are mostly dark. So we get out famished with no money, priority number one being finding an ATM and seeing if we could find a place that would sell us anything to eat. So we roamed the dark streets for a while until we found a dingy little ATM right next to an alleyway that did not seem like the best option, but it did seem like the only option. So my friend Tommy started haggling with the machine, and I sat down on the curb behind him, tired, and let out a sigh while Tommy was back there negotiating with the machine. The owner of a little convenience store, as I picked up my head, I saw him leaving his store with a big pot in hand, and he took it to his car and set it on top of his car and started fiddling with his trunk trying to open it. We must have looked pretty sorry, my friend Tommy and I, because he looks at us, he looks at his pot, he looks at us again, back to his pot, and then without any words, he motions for us to come over, and so Tommy stopped what he was doing. He never got any money out of the machine. But we went over, and the man took us into his store, still yet no words spoken between us. He took us into his store that was already closed, and he fished some paper plates out of the back of the store, some plastic forks, and he took the lid off of his pot, and instantly aromas filled the entire convenience store, and I'm not sure what we ate, but it was something I would describe as like a thick yellow curry with monstrous chunks of what I hope were chicken. And I was, like Pastor Bev, I was just coming off of a couple year stint as a vegan, and I was more accurately what you would call like a flexitarian, maybe a freegan at the time, since I was traveling. And we still had not yet spoken a word to this man, but the message was clear that we were welcome, that we were friends to him, and his hospitality spoke volumes to us. And it was a meal that surprised us in a foreign place, far from home, in a country where they observed a foreign religion, and they were participating in this foreign practice of Ramadan. And we were thoroughly surprised and awed by this meal and this hospitality.
When we were college students, Kirby and I was 20, he was 23, we were already married. We really were already married. He was the resident assistant for an off-campus housing unit for men, right, guys? Friday night we would open the doors and the guys would pile in and we'd play the piano, play the guitars, sing, have worship, and I noticed that they would linger. And so I put a plate of cookies out, usually, a plate of cookies. And I noticed that they would eat the cookies, and so the next week they would come back and eat the cookies and they would linger a little longer. And I realized, they're probably hungry. Like, they're guys. They eat. So I started cooking soup and getting bread and putting food out on the tables, and I noticed Friday night, whatever we put out, they gobbled. I remember, well into the school year, going to the cupboards and starting to open the cupboard doors looking for what else could we put out? What else could, they would eat it all, just like tear the top of the can open. Not really. They would eat it all. We were living on $25 a week for groceries. You want to take that in for a minute? We were living on $25 a week for groceries as students, both of us with tuition to pay, both of us with two or three jobs. I remember thinking Friday night, I wish they wouldn't eat so much because we got to eat this week too. But I want to tell you, Friday night, for the entire year, we never went without. Tables mysteriously multiply. You've heard the pastors tell you this morning, sometimes meals, they form us and grow us up. They shape us when we didn't even realize that was happening. Meals, they They provide us this unimaginable hospitality, meals. They heal us, meals. They expand our story and connect us with the larger story of God all around the world. Meals multiply and hungry people eat. We heard the gospel story read earlier. Probably when Jesus was with his disciples, he is already imagining this last meal. The Bible says he's eager to recline with them. He's eager to sit and have the last supper together. Probably already when the multiplication of the loaves and the fish are happening, Jesus is imagining there's coming a time where we're going to sit together, and I'm going to try and explain to you. Y'all have been living on rumors. Rumors of God's goodness. You just live on rumors of crust and crumbs of hearsay. There's bread, there's real bread, but you're just living on little crumbs and crusts, and there's plenty for everybody, and it heals, and it connects us, and it fills us with unimaginable hospitality, and these meals, they'll form us and shape us, and what's wrong with you? You're just living on crumbs of hearsay and crusts of rumor of the goodness of God. It's a great summary already. Job, if you were here last week, in Job's story, when the whirlwind appears to Job, that's one of the things the whirlwind, God, says to Job. You're just living on rumors and crumbs and hearsay of my goodness. When we come to the table this morning, I think Jesus hopes we will bring every story of meals, meals we've been served, meals we've served, that we'll bring them all to the present experience. Because what we're doing here today is it's not that we're having a religious experience. This is an announcement. The table today, it's an announcement that God is generous, that goodness sustains us, and the gospel is for everyone. That's the table, the meal. We keep coming back and we share all of this together. Think about the meals you've had and the meals you've served in your own homes this morning. Think about that as the pastors serve you. Invite the pastors now to come forward. And you all, from wherever you're at in the balconies, you can stay there. A pastor will come to you. The rest of you on the main floor, we'll invite you to come forward, and everyone will take a piece of bread and a cup of juice and just hold it, keep it with you, because we'll celebrate it together. Hold on to it, would you? If you happen to need gluten-free bread, there's a few of you, right? There's a little cup up the front here with some gluten-free bread, because we don't want anyone to be left out this morning. And this is an open communion. This means everyone is able to eat and drink from this table today. So when we've all got our bread and our cup in our hand, we'll take it together.